Welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman, and with me this weekender is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bruce. How's it going?
Okay, I'm back. I'm not sure I'm fully back on time zone, but I'm back. And you're heading to Europe next week, right?
Yeah. You and I are ships passing in the night here.
So let's talk. I mean, I guess the way I'll start is to say, look, I'm feeling like there's still a lot to go here in terms of tracking some pieces of our first half forecast, especially whether we're going to get the consumption lift in Europe, whether we're going to get the global manufacturing lift. But I'm feeling pretty good about what we're seeing right now, which is I think we are getting a sense that global growth is holding up. U.S. may be slowing, but it's not slowing that much. I think we are kind of getting that sort of broadening in the base. And I think we're also getting the sticky inflation news coming in. And certainly this week's U.S. numbers reinforce that. So you put those together, and we've been pushing the idea that you get a shallow central bank easing cycle that doesn't begin till mid-year. Those pieces of the puzzle feel to me like they're falling into place. The question is, I guess, A, where should we be kind of worried we might be off? And B, what does this kind of mean in terms of going forward? I guess one thing on where we might be off here, which you and I have kind of gone back and forth on, but still is relevant, which is, you know, is the case for central banks easing in June all that strong, you know, at this point? They certainly feel like they want to ease, but you know, how comfortable are you that the inflation news is going to be sufficiently aligned with their thinking to kind of get them to actually deliver it the middle part of the year?
I mean, it's very prospective, right? I mean, I feel like a lot of the kind of the inflation experts out there had been looking for a period.
Are we in that group, or are we outside that group?
I was going to leave that unsaid, Bruce, but
where are we? What is he actually saying about us?
No, but you know, the people that kind of do this for their day job rather than just you know, every JPM weekender. You know, I mean, look, a lot of smart people, including us and you, I think you were kind of at the lead of a lot of this. We're right to point out that things were going to stay hot here, certainly bounce back from the weakness we saw earlier. That was an easy call. But, you know, maybe even overshoot expectations. And I think, you know, that was kind of built into some outlooks. I think it's overshot even more than some of those expectations. So that is a bit worrying. But now you say, well, what do you do with this? And you know, I guess I'm inclined to, and I think you are as well, to kind of fade some of the big overshoot. But whether we get down, you know, enough to get central banks kind of comfortable, you know, I keep saying, I'll say it again, if we get to something in that 2.5 range with those kind of you're set to go. If you're in the 3% range, I think they're not going. I think if you're at 2.6, 2.7 and the labor market's cooling rapidly, I think they'll go. I mean, that's kind
of, let's just sort of kind of put that in context, because we're tracking probably something close to 4% on core CPI in the US.
Absolutely.
For the first quarter.
Yeah.
And we're tracking probably something like 3.3 on the first quarter.
Which is why they won't be cutting next week.
No, but let me just put your kind of view to the test. If, you know, our forecast is we go back down to something like 2.5 for core PCE for the second quarter. If you get that, your first half is running like 2.7, 2.8, and your OIA gets down to like 2.4, I think, if I've got my math right.
Yeah.
Is that for you enough?
I think so. I mean, I really care about the sequentials. And I know Powell kind of elevated the OIAs as we get to smooth through some of the noise. So, you know, the quarter tracking 2.5, the OIA tracking 2.5. If you told me like there was just like red hot gangbuster news out of, you know, other aspects of the economy, I might balk at that. But 2.5 feels like a fairly sufficient number for me, just like 3% feels like a sufficient number for them not to do anything.
I'm with you there. I think there is a bit more risk here that if we get another, you know, as you said, I think people had been expecting at least some rebound in inflation in the first month or two of the year, and we got a much bigger one. So there's a willingness to kind of give it a bit of a pass to see what happens. But if we don't get a significant moderation in the next month or two, it's going to really start to shake people's views of what the year is going to look like as a whole, including possibly the Fed. But I want to kind of maybe pivot here just a second to another topic, which is, okay, so we've got that inflation news, and the Fed has clearly, as we know, pushed back any hopes of a easing next week, but it's guiding us pretty strongly, as is the ECB, towards the, you know, the mid-year as the case for easing. But I think what's kind of, to me, interesting is the idea that we've repriced the Fed a decent amount here in the last few months, and financial conditions broadly have continued to look like they're easing. And I'm sort of thinking in the context of the way we have tended to put the storyline together that, you know, that high for long can kind of boil the frog. Are we at risk of seeing high from bull for long actually not boil the frog because financial conditions are just not tight enough to kind of generate either the weight on growth or the pressure on corporates to kind of generate the problems that eventually create a risk of a recession here? You know, are we kind of losing the plot that we need actually materially lower policy rates to actually deliver a soft landing?
Yeah, I mean, you and I were just talking about this a bit earlier. I think the easing of financial conditions is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it obviously takes those pressures off that we felt were in the pot that was boiling the frog. But easing financial conditions also kind of support pretty strong growth, which is fuel for the flames beneath that pot, if I can torture that metaphor. And
Keep
so
going. Have fun with it.
Reese loves his frogs. We're going to be eating frog legs pretty soon here. You know, I the easing financial conditions, I think, as I said, cuts both ways. I think the aspects that are encouraging, and we wrote about it this week in terms of the profit cycle, is still holding up nicely. That's an area where I felt like pressure would ultimately be building, and we're not seeing that pressure build yet. I mean,
I
it's
mean, it's
done
pretty
better than
impressive
thought.
looking at that piece, how margins in both the US and the rest of the DM are pretty much sitting at record high levels. And this is at the end of 2023. So we've already gone through a year where we thought we'd have margin compression, and we just really haven't had it. So
The question we do in the exercise we run in that piece is we put in a fairly realistic assumptions, I think, on wages moderating some, on productivity moderating some, but still growing at an okay clip. And so you get unit labor costs ultimately just kind of moving sideways at a pretty high level at around 3%. And
But
so the
here's what we
question
get.
is.
So let's just stop there a second, because what you said is, let's just say for argument's sake, unit labor costs are growing at 3%. But what we just said a minute ago is that at least for the first half of the year, we're going to have core inflation running at 3% pace, and have central banks deliver an easing in that. So that's basically implicitly, there's other things that go into the calculation, but that's implicitly saying there's not going to be any meaningful downward pressure on margins in the first half of the year.
Right. Not in a, I mean, you say 3%. I guess I had assumed a sequential run rate on both unit labor costs, or on unit labor costs would be 3%, and the sequential run rate on pricing needs to get down to 2.5.
But we
Now,
have now forecasting that, though. That's my point. We're forecasting something closer to three for the US for core, for both core PC
for second
sequentially, both.
quarter?
No, I'm saying you got a first quarter, second quarter average
No,
that's
I
averaging
know.
three.
That's why I said sequential second. I mean, I don't want to get all tied up here, but and at the end of the day, Bruce, you're right. I mean, even if you're starting to see a little margin compression, I mean, that's
It's
by
really
no
not
means the
much.
end of the world. That's not much. And so,
Yeah.
yes, the health of the corporate sector, I think, is an important part that can sustain this expansion. And that, you know, coupled, and it's related to kind of the supply side stuff that you've been writing about for a while, you know, which is giving you potentially some of that productivity lift. All of these things are a reminder of this kind of idea I keep stressing, which is despite late cycle interest rate, all these kind of the basic fundamentals of the economy are very mid-cycle, and that high rates alone are not a sufficient condition to end an expansion. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the soft landing has to
but
be.
But let's sort of pause on that
here.
Because that's an important point. If we just take that, we're talking cyclically, and I think when people talk about neutral rates, R star, they tend to want to jump to a structural point. But
yeah,
the reality is what you're saying, whether it be because financial conditions are easier, or because corporate performance is mid-cycle and not late cycle, or because we're getting a productivity boost, maybe even an immigration labor supply boost, all of those things suggest that the equilibrium interest rate for at least this point in time in the current conjecture is actually higher. And maybe it's a lot higher than people.
And I think that's the reason why, and to me that totally rationalizes why you would think there should be a terminal rate in this cutting cycle that is a lot higher than whatever that long run R star is. I mean, I noticed, you know, Mike kind of made some changes to his Fed call this week in terms of taking out the five cuts and putting in only three. But he also, which is, I think, was long in coming. But I think the thing that kind of raised my eyebrows, if I'm not mistaken, it looked like he also raised the long run R star. That wouldn't have been.
He raised the Fed's dot plot for R star. Did he raise his own?
No. Yeah, 100%. Yes, he raised. He's saying that the Fed is going to raise their long run estimate, which to me, like if I'm sitting around the board, like I don't care where that thing is, right? That's not where the real mix is. That, you know, it's where do I think this short run R star is? Where do I think the interest sensitivity are? Where are we in the cycle right now? And to me, that's more about where your N25.
Right. The only thing is you don't have an SCP variable to forecast that. You just have the long term one. So,
right.
But when moving the long term one, you're implicitly.
You have a 26 now, right? I mean, you could look at that 26 number to see where that's settling.
So they're at right now. They're at 4.75 for the end of this year and 3.75 for the end of next year. I think where are they for the end of 26? I don't know that.
Down 250. So, I mean, depending on how you want to do the math on that, they're at about 3%.
Okay, so they're down to 3%. So, and that's also interesting. It raises another interesting point. If what we're saying is that things are maybe doing better here, financial conditions are easier, health of the corporate sector is better, supply side might be doing better, and that requires a higher interest rate. You know, one of the interesting things is that the market and the Fed, as you say in their guidance, we just noted, continues to have substantial easing priced in well beyond 24. The market has got about 170 basis points of easing, if I've got it right, for the Fed between now and the end of 2025. Mm-hmm. So the question is that really where the challenge is going to come? Obviously, growth can blow out on us, and in which case the Fed's going to ease a lot. But assume for a moment we're not in a downturn. It's like that 170 is a lot to expect in a world in which you know, the economy is showing resilience and inflation is at least modestly sticky.
Assume you have a can opener is what you're saying?
No. Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, like, yeah, if. I mean, we've had this debate many times on this call, which is I think the market pricing, I can tell lots of stories.
Well, forget about the market pricing. Let's forget the market pricing. Is it reasonable for the Fed in a non-recession environment to ease 175 basis points, which is their current forecast?
Well, that would still put you a little over 3%, right?
Yeah, it would put you about 3.5.
So if you felt, I mean, yeah, that I mean, as a terminal rate sitting around there, that's still tight.
How do you know it's tight?
Well, fair enough, but I mean, it's recognizing that you are not getting back to long run neutral, which is suggesting that the interest sensitivity of the economy.
How do you know you're not getting back to long term neutral? I mean, this is the debate. This is what we're talking about.
No, but now you're doing what I said. I don't think we have a strong view about structural R star being higher here.
I'm talking about where R star is. Forget structural, where R star is in 24, 25. Whatever it is now, it's telling you something about where we are over the, you know, the coming four or five quarters, right?
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that's the issue at hand. I think in a world in which everybody's obviously now geared towards the Fed doing less this year and
so
start
far out, I think the issue at hand is, you know, when are they going to start and how much are they going to do between when they start and the first 12 months?
Well, I the reason why I think that what this is the issue at hand is because I think the markets, if they price in a Fed that moves slower or move starts later, but is still pricing in a Fed that's got plenty to do, I think that's a support for financial conditions that wouldn't be there.
Well,
if
I
the
think
Fed's...
it is, but I think all of that is going to be determined in the near term, which is like our friend that does long-term forecasting, we always say all your long-term forecasts are based on the near term. I think if you tell me what the Fed is, when the Fed's going to start and what they're going to do in the first 12 months, I'll have a good idea of what's going to happen the next 12 months.
Well, if the Fed does two or three in the this year, which is not far from where the market is pricing, the market is still pricing another 100 basis points next year. My point is the Fed could do two or three this year and stop, and that would be all you get. And then the question is how vulnerable is the very favorable market environment in terms of financial conditions to assuming that the Fed is going to stop without
delivering. I think you would get more of what you're seeing, which is if the reason the Fed is stopping is just because you've just got an extremely healthy, robust corporate sector with broad-based income generation across businesses and households and everyone's still spending, why in the world wouldn't kind of financial markets feel good about that?
For sure. I mean, there's a distinction between the Fed doing less because the economy is doing better. It's reassessing its neutral rate as opposed to the Fed doing less because it's got more to fight on inflation. Those two things are very different. Sure. For sure.
Yeah.
With that in mind, the Fed is not the only central bank here. We've got the BOJ coming up and we got the Bank of England and a whole bunch of other central banks. I'm not going to go through the whole list.
BOJ is interesting, right? I mean, that's the fun one.
That is interesting. Let's talk about the BOJ for a minute, because I think we have an interesting call on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we feel a little out there because just about anyone you talk to says they're either going to hike next week or in April, and we're still holding out for June. Obviously, the data, you know, has been finally fell into line. Really, I feel like at the last minute, because things looked fairly weak on the growth side, and it felt like some of the inflation CPI numbers were coming in soft. And then things turned around. So the growth numbers suddenly looked better. The latest CPI numbers came in stronger than expected. And then the big thing this week, which people had been anticipating, was the Xunto spring wage negotiation rounds. Those came out even stronger than what people were expecting with, I think 3.7 is what the number is. And that's something that I think will support Ueda's desire to see this kind of virtuous circle of kind of strong price increases going into wages. I think our call is that we really don't yet have the full picture showing of the feedback of high wages feeding back into prices, and that there will be enough that the BOJ has to do in terms of kind of tuning some of its balance sheet policies.
I don't think that's the right way to talk about her view, Aka's view. I think she's basically saying, Ueda wants to see demand pick up on the consumer side, which I haven't seen yet. Not just see the wage numbers come in, but also
right.
to see it.
You're right, and that is an area of weakness.
Yeah, and that hasn't happened.
Consumers
yet.
Are still very weak.
And then the point would be that that they, rather than lead with rates, they lead with the balance sheet, and they make the adjustments. They get rid of YCC entirely. They stop the purchase programs, and then they. And then we get a signal from Ueda next week as to whether it's April or June. And I don't think we're wedded to June over April. I think we're going to wait to see what his signal will be. As well as also, which is a big part of the call, is, you know, kind of I'm kind of carrying over from my conversation on the Fed, which is like, what is he telling us they're going to do over the next 12 to 18 months? How much and how fast are they going to move? Any guidance on that will probably be really important for the market. So we'll see on that front. Maybe a word on European central banks. There's nothing coming from the ECB here other than they're kind of talking as if they're really wanting to go in June. And it's kind of a little bit of a shift from a more data dependent dialogue to a calendar focused one, which is a little bit surprising, but I guess not so much.
I have to say, it's been kind of nice to see. Like, I think people were kind of viewing the Fed and ECB similarly. And then it felt like, at least from the kind of natural language processing stuff, that the ECB started to shift, becoming a bit more dovish and then a fair bit more dovish than the way the Fed was talking. And that's just a model-based estimate, but it caught my attention. And I think we were pushing back again, or at least we collectively were saying maybe we should fade that. But I think it's actually true. I think it gave the right signal that there is a kind of a shift in tone that took place. Now you and I had this running debate for the past year about whether the ECB would be cutting before the Fed. We've gone back and forth on that, but I think we've generally skewed towards the ECB has more reason to cut first, and that may be right.
Well, we'll see. It looks like now they're about to kind of hit the starting line at about the same time.
And then the other side, we also have the BOE.
Who meets earlier in June? Like, is it the Fed or the ECB? I think it's the ECB, actually, so they may ease earlier.
Yeah. We knew that.
They win that
very clever day. Bruce but BOE, let's we actually have waiting a little bit, right? So we have them waiting till all the way till August before we think they're going to come. They did get a slightly, I think there was reason to think maybe it could be even later at some point, but the softer labor market report this week maybe, you know, moves the needle a little bit, but I think Alan feels pretty on track for August.
We can't end this without giving you an opportunity to wax for a moment on the PMIs next week, Joe. So why don't you take us home with that? What were we expecting in these flash DM PMIs for March?
Well, I think we're looking for a bit of an improvement across Europe. And I guess maybe if that were I think our team is looking for a bit of a slight pullback in the U.S.
In the U.S.,
That's probably based on some of the latest other survey data that we got.
Yeah, yeah. Lovely Empire survey this morning.
Right, yeah. But I think the general picture, if that's right, would be more of a continuation of this broadening out, right? This rotation that we've been looking for, particularly if you see something on the services holding up, not doing as well as what the manufacturing is. We do have, even though the U.S. is going down, I think we have the global moving up a little bit. I think the broad manufacturing sector has been, you know, very choppy. And yet I think we've made the right calls, which is we said there was going to be an inventory led bounce in the second half of the year that ended up of last year that ended up being more right than we thought, with more inventories than we thought. Then we said, because of that, that there is going to be a drag at the start of the year as inventories pull back. And I think that's tracking. The hard activity manufacturing numbers have not been great. They haven't been tracking this uplift in the PMIs. And I think it's an inventory story, because you are starting to see final demand peak back up again, which is ultimately the most encouraging sign of resilience here. So amid all these ups and downs in actual manufacturing and inventories, you know, I'll still look to, one, the PMIs improving, and two, the kind of underlying kind of final demand numbers holding up.
So last word, what's your forecast for manufacturing output growth on an annualized basis in the next 6 months?
I'll still stick with 2%. I think you've said 2 to 3, right?
Yeah, well, that's not much difference.
I know it's not much different, but I'll say 2%.
We got to find some better things to fight about, but we'll leave that. That'll be a thought for us to take into the weekend, and we'll see where we are next week. Right. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Hope we can continue the conversation next week on the Weekender.